Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It's an exciting time for science as people of all ages await what for most is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. But most of us are not scientists. What should we as amateurs be looking for next Monday during the total solar eclipse? And how can we help our kids and ourselves understand and appreciate the event? Joining me to talk about it are Jim Small, president of the St. Louis Astronomical Society. It's dedicated to the advancement of astronomy. Don Ficken chairs the St. Louis Eclipse Task Force, an eclipse awareness education organization. Aaron Tyree is program manager at the Challenger Learning Center. It focuses on space-related science. Jim, I'm going to start with you with the absolute basics, because as much publicity as this eclipse has gotten, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who don't know exactly what is happening.
Well, basically, the moon on occasion will line up so that it actually gets between the sun and the earth and completely blocks out the sun from our view. That's what happens during a total eclipse. If that happens in your area, then you'll be experiencing what they call a darkness during the middle of the day. And it'll be probably, from what people say, I've actually never seen one myself yet. I'm hoping to Monday, but it'll probably be the experience of a lifetime.
No doubt it will be that, because they don't happen all that often in our neck of the woods, do they? Don, do people in different locations see different things?
Yes, absolutely. What happens is that when the sun shines and over the moon and creates a shadow on Earth, the shadow only is a very narrow 70 miles wide. So if you happen to be outside of that shadow, let's say a little bit north of St. Louis, you'll be seeing what's called a partial eclipse. And in a partial eclipse, as really nice as that is, what happens is that you really can never look directly at the sun with your naked eye because the corona is simply washed out by the bright light. On the other hand, when the shadow approaches and you actually get in what's called a period of totality, you literally can take off your eclipse glasses and all eye protection and look directly at where the sun was, because what you'll see is the outer atmosphere called the corona of the sun. And that will be no brighter than the full moon. It's very safe. You can even actually put binoculars and look at the prominences around the edge. It's a fantastic life experience. And again, this has not happened in St. Louis, believe it or not, since the year 1442.
Before Columbus discovered America.
Yeah, actually, he was born in, I think, 1451, so he wasn't even born yet.
He missed the whole shooting
match. He did. He was a little late, yeah.
Aaron, let me turn to you, because you're dealing with a lot of young people. And I'm curious as to the kind of questions that they're asking and what level of excitement they're experiencing. Are they caught up in all of this?
It depends. So some of the kids, especially the kids that we've been seeing over the summer, are space enthusiastic kids. So they're getting it. And it's been fun to see the change just over the course of this year as we describe things and the students have picked up on other information before they see us. So in January, we have this portable planetarium, and we would show what's essentially an eclipse happening on Jupiter. And I'd say, well, so here's this little dark circle going across Jupiter. What's happening? And they'd say, oh, is it a black hole? But now that we're getting close to the eclipse, some kid will figure out, oh, they're having an eclipse. And so that's been fun to see the increase in understanding just as the year's gone on from other sources.
Are they too young to understand some of the vocabulary? Don mentioned the corona a while ago. We've got umbra and penumbra and words that are a little bit different.
Recommending, and really what I heard from a teacher in Rockwood, was they're marketing this as the biggest shadow you'll ever experience. And that's true. That's what it is. And so it's a great opportunity to teach vocabulary that you wouldn't see otherwise, but it's actually pretty easy to avoid it, that you're going to see, that you're going to be in this big shadow that the moon's causing, and you'll only see a little bit of the sun, and then you won't see any of the sun at all. You'll just see some rays. So you can avoid vocabulary if you want to, and the kids tend to get it.
What sort of special plans do you have for the kids for Monday?
So most of what we've been doing has actually been teacher preparation, because the kids are back in school. Huh. So we had a professional development for teachers, giving them activities that they could do for the eclipse and leading up to it. We have a program on Saturday that's a public program at 9 o'clock, so you need reservations for it, but the kids get to do a simulated mission to Mars and then go in our inflatable planetarium, and it's a digital projector, so we can fast forward to the 21st and see what's happening, but also get a macroscopic view of what's happening, view the eclipse from the moon, see eclipses happening on other planets, like I mentioned before.
You are ready, needless to say. Jim, I'm going to come back to you on this. We had a question from one of our listeners on our Public Insight Network. It's one that occurred to me, and it's probably a simple answer, but I haven't figured it out yet. The sun appears to travel east to west as the Earth turns. The moon appears to follow the same trajectory. Why, then, is the eclipse seen first by people in the west and then moves eastward?
Well, the moon, on a daily basis, if you look at where the moon is one day and then come back and look at it the next day, it has traveled toward the east. So the moon, as it actually orbits the Earth, travels the other direction. During a nightly basis, if you watch as the night goes on, obviously it sets in the west and rises in the east, et cetera. But from a night-to-night basis, the moon, in over 28 days, makes its way east, about 15 degrees a day, roughly.
There's a lot to learn when one of these events happens, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jim, we talked a moment ago about the necessity of having the proper glasses, eye protection. We've been talking about that here. Everybody's talking about the importance of that. But what's the next most important thing that we really ought to know about this that we probably don't know?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that you maybe don't know that, but I think certainly the safety part is the first most important thing. You really need to have proper eye protection. One of the things that we talk about, particularly with the public, is whenever let's say that you're heading towards totality, or that you're even in the partial eclipse, whatever else, you can be tricked to think that the sun is safe because it's 99% blocked. I mean, it's dimming down like you've really dimmed down the lights. But even that 1%, the sun is basically a million times brighter than the full moon, and even at 99% blocked, it's still 10,000 times brighter than the full moon. So you really want to make sure that eye protection. So safety is the first thing. But I think the second thing is that this is something you really have to plan for. You really just need to decide where you're going, and particularly if you're going into what's called the path of totality. Schools are originally, I think a lot of schools had planned to be in session, but when they started looking at the traffic estimates, they're terrific. I mean, they're enormous. And I-55, for example, on Google Maps, interactive like a traffic map, is a red zone. And so there are folks literally that will be driving to, let's say, Festus or other places on Monday morning at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning just to get there. You can't just get up at 10 o'clock and say, oh, let's go see the eclipse in, say, Perry County or something. Mm-hmm. You really got to plan.
You had mentioned off the air that Festus seems to be kind of a ground zero for traffic.
Well, I don't know that Festus is a ground zero. There was a analysis done by a guy. There's a thing called a watershed, and a watershed is where you take water and you plot where it'll actually go on ground. There's a thing called a drive shed, and he's actually taking, instead of water, people, and actually, instead of ground, roads. And what he came up with is that Festus, Missouri, is the closest drive-in destination to 13.8 million people. And, of course, where they're coming from would be up, say, Chicago direction. And that means they'll be passing through St. Louis, by the way. And we're not saying that 13.8 million people will show up in St. Louis or even Festus. But even a million, that's a big number for any place. And so that's the point of planning. And that's not just Festus. When you go down to, say, 44 Highway to St. Clair, those are some high traffic. And, of course, most of the real totality, what's called the center zone, is really in some rural areas, and of course you have rural roads to get there, and so you've got people unfamiliar with how to get, you know, that with the territory, maybe looking around, driving with maps or GPSs, whatever else, it becomes more dangerous, and so emergency management's got a lot of issues to deal with, and I think a lot of folks in the actual area of totality will just stay home and just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So there'll mostly be people traveling to see it.
Yeah. Jim, do all eclipses, total solar eclipses, look the same? And what I mean is, what we're going to be seeing on Monday, is that the same thing that the ancients saw 2,000 years ago?
It's a little bit different because the moon is gradually moving away, and at some point we'll never see any eclipses, total eclipses again, because it'll move far enough away that it can't completely cover the sun anymore. So it kind of depends on how close the moon is to the Earth as to how much sun it covers. The eclipse in 2024, for example, it's a little closer, and the totality is going to last over 4 minutes for that one. So depending on the situation for, you know, how close the moon is, when totality occurs, it can be a little bit different. We had here in St. Louis in 94, we had an annular eclipse, which the moon was just far enough away. It was centered over the sun, but but it left a little ring of light from the sun around the edges. A lot of people remember that one.
Why is the moon moving away? Is it a gravitational pull?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the, is it the sun?
So it's it's gradually gradually losing its tidal lock, and so it's going to eventually move away slowly, just a couple centimeters a year. But it's not going to happen in our lifetimes. But eventually, it'll be far enough away that it's not going to be able to produce a total eclipse. And of course, millions of years ago, the dinosaurs had a different view of a total eclipse because it was it was closer at that time. So they would get a long duration, maybe.
Aaron, what advice do you have for parents with regard to watching the eclipse with their kids?
The first thing was, if you're able to take the day off and get to totality, it's worth it. Everything I hear is it is literally the difference between 99.9% and 100% is night and day. It's like Don was saying, it's the difference between something that's 1,000 times brighter than the moon or something that's only as bright as a full moon. So if you can get there, do it. But whether you do or not, make sure that you get to see it multiple times. So experience, see what the sun looks like either through the glasses or a pinhole viewer, whatever your experience is. See what it looks like just as the eclipse is starting, where you see the sun, but there's maybe a little bite out of it. And then see it again when it's as full as it's going to get, 100% or 99%, which will be around 1:18 p.m., and then see it again as it's leaving and as the sun's getting bigger and bigger.
Any special equipment that just for kids, aside from the obvious protection?
Not just for kids, but some of the ideas that I think are fun are getting a colander because if you hold a colander up to a sidewalk, then you have this pinhole viewer that has 100 pinholes. So you'll see 100 little suns getting covered.
Little crescents,
exactly. Yeah. Some for teachers, I heard a great tip, which was to take the glasses and tape an index card to the top, cut it out like a crown or something, and write the kids' names. Because it's the third day of school, you're still getting used to your kids. They can decorate it. They take ownership of it, and it's there. And to tie elastic bands to the glasses so the kids don't lose them. So those are some tips for especially for teachers. But it could be fun for parents, too, to decorate the glasses.
No question about that. I have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back. And we're talking about how amateurs, such as most of us are, can view and appreciate the eclipse, which, in case you haven't heard, is happening next Monday, as I understand it, right? It's still scheduled for Monday. All righty. Well, we'll talk more about that. With me in studio are Jim Small, president of the St. Louis Astronomical Society, Don Ficken, chairs the St. Louis Eclipse Task Force, and Aaron Tyree, program manager at the Challenger Learning Center. Back in just a moment. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Okay, and welcome back as we talk about the amateur's view, or how amateurs should view the total solar eclipse that's taking place next Monday. With me in studio, Jim Small, Don Ficken, and Aaron Tyree. We have a question here that I'll ask you, Don. I'll put it to you. A follow-up question: when is it safe to drive after the eclipse occurs? Now, I don't think Anna Bolivia is talking about the lack of light or what have you. I think she's talking about traffic. You wanted to add to something to the traffic story.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of talk about getting there, and I think it's very important to plan and arrive early. But one of the concerns that actually the state raised, which I hadn't thought about, truthfully, is like whenever you leave a game or leave a theater, everybody tends to leave at once. So I think maybe the thing to do is to just wait a while. And, of course, this depends a little bit about where you are. If you're in the center of totality, that's a lot bigger issue because you'll have a lot of people leaving at once. The truth is, along the edges of totality, in other words, it's just maybe a minute or so, there probably isn't going to be unusual amounts of traffic. It would be no different than if a 4th of July kind of thing would let out. So I think it depends a little bit about where you are, but I would mostly just be patient. Don't be planning to be home at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You need to just say, look, I'm going to be around a while and just go with the flow.
And being patient also involves, if you're going to hang around, maybe having water, maybe having food on hand, Jim?
Yeah, I have plenty of food, have plenty of water, and have something to do after the eclipse. I've been to a couple of shuttle launches, and the road going to Orlando, I think, was a two-hour parking lot there right after the launch. A lot of people might leave right after totality, But you want to see the end of the partial eclipse too, which lasts till 2:45 or so. So stay at least that long. I advised a lot of groups that are doing big events, have something for the people to do after the eclipse, concert, whatever, some good reason to stay and enjoy themselves after experiencing the eclipse, so they don't have to drive anywhere.
I've heard.
So if you got something to do like that, that would be great.
I've heard some people suggest bring playing cards or what have you.
Oh, sure.
And,
yeah.
And Aaron, this is important for the young ones too, is to have, because they can, once it's over, they're going to want to move out.
For sure. So one thing you can do is to just, if you're wanting to make it educational, there's so many things you can do with light and shadows and the sun and moon in general. You can, if you're in an area with cement, you could make yourself into a human sundial. So make a pose, trace your shadow at 11 in the morning, then do it again at 1, do it again at 2, so you can see the shadow. That's something you could do any day, but it can be a way to engage in the event when nothing super exciting is happening or when you're waiting afterwards. Also there, you can do special snacks. You can bring sun chips, Starburst, moon pies. Keep it fun.
Let's take a couple of calls here. This question has come a few times. So let's bring Gary in. He's calling from Dogtown. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if your guests could talk a little bit more about how to know when it's actually totality. Because I've read a little bit, and they describe, you know, the sliver and what they call something beads. And I've looked at a couple of pictures, and I'm still not sure. I mean, I'm going to err on the side of waiting a little bit longer, but when we're only talking like 2 minutes, you know, how can you know, or do they have pictures or videos that they could point us to so we could see, you know, what to know before we take our glasses off?
Who'd like to take that one?
Well, there's plenty of videos and so on the web where you can get that. On the stleclipse.org website, there's a place called the Xavier Eclipse Map under Cool Tools, and you can actually click on your house or wherever you're going to view from, and they can give you pretty much exact times. There's also some apps out there that will actually tell you audibly when to get ready for totality, et cetera. Bailey's beads happens when there's just the valleys between mountains on the moon poking through, and there's a diamond ring that's the last sort of bright piece of the sun before it escapes. But once Bailey's beads has occurred, then you should be able to take off the glasses and so on. And you'll know, because if you still have the glasses on during totality, you're not going to see anything. But knowing when it's coming back, if you know how long it's going to last, that helps a lot for getting the glasses back on.
But there's not much difference between 99% totality and 100% totality.
Oh, there's a big difference.
Oh, bright,
really?
Brightness-wise,
really?
Yeah. Huge.
Really?
Very,
yeah.
Very big difference.
Yeah, so with 99% totality, what happens is the sun has still got the 1% brightness, and the corona, you will not be able to see the corona, and probably will not be able to see the planets or the stars. But once the 100% happens, then it will be completely dark in the sense of a full moon darkness, and you'll be able to look up with your naked eye. And I would say that, you know, the one we've talked about, the when to look, the glasses, whenever you put the eclipse glasses on, they'll go dark because there's not enough sun to actually fire up and make that actually come through. That's actually the easy part. The hard part is the reverse side, is when the sun starts coming back.
Yeah.
And particularly if you have children, let's say that you have 30 seconds of totality, what you need to do is probably start having the children get their glasses on about 15 seconds before the sun comes back. And you need to know that where your location is so that they're actually prepared.
They can just drop them down. Right.
There's actually, it's very easy to continue to look at the sun when it's coming around because you're excited.
What about babies?
You don't have to worry about them because the sun is no more dangerous than on any other day. It's just more tempting. So anyone who's not going to get that an eclipse is happening is going to be perfectly fine like they would any other day at the park. I think your biggest concern should be sunblock.
Sunblock.
Yeah.
Sunblock.
Yeah, ultraviolet, right?
Yeah, if you're out there for 3 hours, yep.
Let's take another call. Lawrence joins us from St. Louis. Lawrence, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I want to talk about the city of St. Louis, but first off, what about dogs?
Same thing as with kids. They're not going to know an eclipse is happening, and it's no more dangerous than any other day, so they'll be totally fine.
They look at the sun. You never see a dog staring at the sun. you shouldn't. Well, so just so my second question, then I got a third one. Just what if I stay in the city of St. Louis, what's going to happen?
You'll see a 99% partial eclipse. It won't go dark. If you have your glasses on, you'll see the moon cross the sun and leave just a sliver of the sun still visible during the entire time. So if you can get half an hour farther south, it'd be great if you're able to do that.
Don't take the glasses off.
Be more specific, I think there are some places in downtown St. Louis, like the Arch, the Cardinal Stadium. Those are not in totality. But a little bit of South St. Louis actually is in totality.
Right.
It depends
Tower
where
Grove
you,
Park is.
Yeah, so Tower Grove actually is planning some events there. So you can get in totality within the city of St. Louis and actually get some fun.
Just get south, because I was about to say, is there no end to the slights?
It actually ends in South Carolina. So yeah.
My next quick question. That's a little obtuse, a little arcane. I think the host will get a chuckle out of it. Will the Pope be coming?
Okay, Lawrence. Thank you
this
very
will be
much.
Bigger than the Pope.
we're going to move along, Lawrence. thank you so much for the call. Don, what about animals? I mean, if we hear stories that the animals will react differently because they'll think it's night, is this actually happening or is this a little wild?
Yeah, there's a lot of documented evidence where animals do react differently. You got to remember, first off, that animals really, like Aaron's saying, they don't really understand any difference. They just know it's getting dark. The big difference between this darkness and a normal evening is that the sun tends to set slowly. From our perspective, it gradually goes. Where this will be a very quick, sudden process. And animals will, I mean, it's very possible that if dogs decide they want to go lay down when it's night, they'll do that whenever it gets dark. But the animals really won't, as far as normal domestic animals, won't really change. But as the darkness occurs, there's about an hour and a half as the moon starts getting covered up by the sun. And for the first hour, you really won't see much. But that last half hour is when it's like dialing down. So that's when you can start seeing maybe birds flying around. You know, they might be looking for a place to roost or maybe even farm animals. Hey, it's getting dark. I'm supposed to go back to the barn. So therefore, I'd go back to the barn, or even fireflies starting to come out. So what you would expect under normal darkness might be actually occurring about that time.
Jim, what could I expect to see at the zoo?
That zoo would be really interesting, I think. I've got friends at the World Bird Sanctuary, too, so it'd be interesting to see what the owls are going to do for that. Or any nocturnal creature might become more active. Any diurnal creature, you know, one that's active during the day, might become less active. Or, you know, like you said, birds might go to roost.
But this can start.
The problem is, I don't think the zoo's in the path, right?
It's so, not.
Just one corner building, a maintenance building, right?
Yeah.
So they would not. An animal would not react differently at 99%.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that what's going to do is it's going to be pretty dark. It won't be completely dark, but it'll be dark enough to where you may be able to see the planet Venus by that point, and you should be able to see Bailey's Beach if you're right on the edge of it. So, actually, the zoo. I had that question posed to me one time, and if you go back, I think the zoo was formed around 1904, and there's not been any kind of serious partial eclipse since they were formed. Yeah. This will be the first real time that they're getting a 99.99% partial eclipse.
This would be an interesting place to be, wouldn't it? No question about it.
It was really hard to find glasses big enough for the elephants.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. And to keep them on.
Oh, yeah.
And to put them on.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's face it. I'm going to take this one for you, Aaron. Michael writes, could you please explain how to make a pinhole viewer? You mentioned that earlier. How to use it and the physics that explains why it works.
Sure. The basics of a pinhole viewer of any sort is just that if you have a small enough hole, then light acts. You can sort of think of it as a laser. So if you're looking at your pencil and you agree that someone else in the room is looking at your pencil, then you know that the light must be bouncing off the tip of the pencil in a bunch of different directions. But if you just get this one hole, then all of the light that's reflecting off that pencil is going through in one spot. You can't really see it with a pencil, but if you have something really bright, like the sun, then the light from the top of the sun is going to go through that hole and hit one particular spot. And the light from the bottom is going to go through the hole and hit up. It'll make like a cross pattern. And the light from the right is going to go through the hole and hit the left. And the light from the left is going to go through and hit the right. But since it will all only hit one spot, you'll actually get an image of the sun. So as opposed to just seeing a shadow or a bright thing, you will get to see an image. And there are ways to experiment with this with pinhole viewers where you could actually look outside and see these upside down trees during a bright sunny day. So to make one, the easiest thing to do is to get a pair of index cards, poke a hole in one with, you know, a push pin, and then you just go outside and you try to line up the hole with the sun and then catch an image of it on the card that doesn't have a hole in it. The only trick is that because it's so bright outside, you can get a better image if you enclose it. So you can poke a hole in a shoebox or a cereal box and put some white paper on the edge for a screen and then cut a hole for yourself to peek inside and see what's happening.
Jim, I'm going to go for the glasses. That's going to be
It'll be much easier. But you can also make pinhole projectors that you can get a big enough image for other people to share.
Mm-hmm.
We've modified some Galileo telescopes to do that and produce a rather large image that a group can look at all at once without too much trouble. And the pinhole, the basic idea for the pinhole is if the distance that the pinhole projects is 500 times the diameter of the hole, then you're going to get a pretty decent image. And so you can even put up like a small piece of mirror and deflect the sun's image into a dark hallway or something like that and get a fairly large image of the sun that people can just look at directly.
You mentioned a mirror. Let me just point out again with this eye protection thing. Smoked glass isn't going to work.
No.
It's not good for
you.
Colored glass, that sort of thing. You really need those those questions.
15 pairs of sunglasses won't work either.
Won't work either. Okay, let's take a call from Sherry and joining us from Rolla. Sherry, welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, folks. I was just looking at my astrological calendar, and the 21st is a new moon, totally. So I wonder how many people think they're going to be seeing the moon, because they're not going to see anything like that. It's just the sun will suddenly go dark, or gradually go dark.
Sherry, thank you. Don, you want to take that?
Yeah, well, they actually won't technically see the moon. What they'll see is the moon crossing the face of the sun, and that's the partial as it's actually happening. By the way, it does take a new moon to make an eclipse actually happen. The moon has to be in the new moon phase. That's one of the factors that makes it actually happen. So you'll pretty much be able to see the shadow of the sun on the moon by just looking at it. It'll be crossing the face of it.
And that's one reason why it's important to have kids look at the sun before the eclipse has started, because if they look after it's pretty well covered, then it's going to be a crescent shape, and kids will think, okay, well, I'm looking at the moon, just like I've seen at nighttime. Mm-hmm. So it can be important to show them, to convince them that it is the sun before it starts getting covered.
Yeah, and a fun piece of that, by the way, is that when they look at the sun through the eclipse glasses, it turns out that the sun's exactly the size of the moon. And that's why it works, by the way. And they're saying, wow, it looks pretty small. Well, that's actually the size of the moon if you were to look up at night.
But you can hold up a pinky at arm's length. We'll block out the moon, or we'll block out the sun. They're the same size in the sky from our perspective.
It's going to change over the millennia because the moon is moving
very slowly. Our
time is beginning to wind down, and I don't have time to take the call. But Chris in Crestwood asks, will the streetlights automatically come on?
They might.
I think so. I think it depends. And particularly, I hate to say this, if it happens to get cloudy, it'll get very, very dark. And so I'm thinking that very well. But it depends on whether they're timed or not, or whether they're basically light sensitive.
We only have a minute left. A lot of questions have arisen with regard to cell phones and what's going to be happening with them. Going to be a lot of traffic, needless to say. But do we know, is cell phone transmission reception going to be affected?
Well, I sat through some meetings on that very issue, and you know, the truth is we don't really know. I know that the carriers are deploying mobile stations to, particularly in rural areas, is probably the bigger concern. I don't think it's so much in the main part of the city itself, but it could be an issue, yes.
But sunspots, things like that, are not going to affect
you. This is no different than any other sunny day.
All righty. Well, we're going to go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have to leave it at that. This has been fascinating. Can't wait for Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Where are you going to be? Very quickly, Don.
I'll be in Festus if it's clear.
Jim?
Wherever it's clear.
St. Genevieve, and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Have fun on Monday. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Jim Small, president of the St. Louis Astronomical Society, Don Ficken, chair of the St. Louis Eclipse Task Force, and Aaron Tyree, program manager of the Challenger Learning Center.